Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
You say you want a rebel. 9:15 on a Monday. Joining us live from the great state of Texas, Michael Musselman. Gunner, what's up?
Not much, man.
All right.
Recovering from my city travels yesterday.
Gunner went to San Antonio, Texas, and finally went to see the Alamo. For those of us that have never been to the Alamo, what would strike us about the Alamo?
I think the size really gets the people. Because everybody, I think, expects it. Like my daughter, I mean, she thought it was like, Dad, this is small. And, yeah, you know. But, so, I got on my daughter about, you know, I'm a big fan of, before I go somewhere, what I do is I research.
Right.
So I learned about it. So there's a lot of places, you know, like battlefields and shit like that I go to. And I already know the battle. It makes no sense not to go. I mean, could you imagine walking to, like, the wilderness? Because there's not a lot of shit there, you know, that, like, Gettysburg or Vicksburg or anything, like, big ones. So you go to the wilderness and you're looking at a bunch of clumps of trees. But if you can't visualize and you don't know what happened, it's really hard to really soak in the moment, you know.
All right, so just for everybody, he's talking about the battle of the wilderness in the American Civil War. Okay.
Right.
So just so he's not talking talking about the wilderness and the zombie apocalypse, okay? He's talking about the American Civil War. Okay.
Right.
So no, I'm totally with you. Because if you do that, you get so much more out of, if you're just going there to get veneer level knowledge. Oh, look at this. This is Little Round Top. Geez, I thought it was higher. You know, not that high. Well, there's Big Round Top. It's not as big as that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could see why they call that Big Round Top. It's not exactly the conversation you want to be having if you're interested in history, but a lot of people do. A lot of people do. So you got on Megan for that?
Well, yeah, a little bit. I was like, because she was asking me questions, like, Dad, what about this time? And I said, hey, the answer is out there. You should have found it out before you got here.
Oh, no. I didn't know it was going to go like that today.
No, I mean, I'm a hard one when it comes to that kind of stuff, because she gets it. She's like, yeah, you know, you're right. Okay.
But would you just tell me?
But, yeah, and then I do. But, I mean, but it's like a, and like we were talking before, I think it's more of a thing of, if you understand the history of Texas, the Alamo is a little bit more significant than the country.
So you don't think people,
because
when they
this
go?
This is before Texas became a state, though. You know, so this is before
it's
a state.
I know,
this
but
is,
it's a national, is, it was what got America, the United States. Texas was its own country, the Republic of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Got its ass kicked. And then Big Brother had to get involved. And so,
well,
yeah.
It didn't get its ass kicked, dude.
Well, you're...
Don't say that.
You're from Texas, so how would you characterize it when a foreign country comes to your aid and then they absorb you?
Okay. It's not... Because they weren't organized. And then when they did get organized, whose ass got kicked?
The Mexican's ass got...
So...
Santa Ana got his ass kicked.
He didn't not only get his ass kicked, they went all the way down into his capital.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It didn't go well.
Boys, if you ever do this again.
Just so we don't leave any doubt about this. That's right. I think that's where we got the blood stripe, too, didn't we?
Yeah, the battle of Gibraltar. Yeah, the bullshit story. But it wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the American army that ended the Mexican thing in 1836. That was the Texas Army.
Oh my God.
The Texan Army went down. It was the Battle of San Joaquin that defeated the Mexican army and ended the revolution. I mean, and then wars, then the Mexican-American War started shortly after that. But
what year was the Alamo?
36.
1836. Yeah, 36. Okay, so one, it's small.
It's really small.
Like, how small is really small? How much of a city block is the Alamo? Is it a full city block? Is it? Because, see, I would expect, this is just me, and I've heard it small before. So in my mind's eye, when I think of, like, the Alamo, I think of, like, a city block like Fenway Park. And the Alamo is,
okay,
like,
well,
it's like, it's got a big fence around it. It's got a big open area in it. In one corner.
It's called a walled area, yeah.
In one corner, but it's going to be big.
Like a cattle.
It's going to be big like Fenway. It's going to be big like Fenway Park. It's going to be big.
No, no, no. It's not that big. It's like, it's probably about a city block. Well, it doesn't exist. The actual size doesn't really exist anymore. What's left is the interior, you know, where the building, and then the fortress, and then some of the buildings. But what's missing is like the outside building. So when it first was built, I think there was like 9 buildings total, and you're talking maybe, I don't know, 5-10 acres encompassing of an area with a wall around it or a fence, and then an interior wall around that. So, I mean, it wasn't really a fort per se. It was kind of just an outpost type, you know, place. But, you know, the crazy thing to understand about the Alamo is, you know, so it was from February 23 to March 6th, where it was actually taken. So 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks, a band of 250, 260 guys hold off close to 2,000 Mexican regulars from the Mexican army, Santa Ana's troops. And so he launched the assault, the first assault thinking, and the guys, the defenders of the Alamo smoke checked them. I mean, it was a bloodbath, man. They were like, holy shit, these guys got their crap wired. So then he, you know, laid siege to the Alamo, and then laid siege to a small force, a group like that. You know, but
and they stayed. And the biggest they could have left right after the first battle. They could have said, "Look, before everybody else gets here."
That's what it was for. It was, we're going to stand up. We're going to stand up to the Mexican, onslaught.
Jim Bowie. I used to watch this all the time. Daniel Boone, Jim Bowie, like
Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett. Davy Crockett, man, he dies down there.
William Travis.
I cried. William
Travis.
Let me tell you, I used to watch that all the time on the Disney. It wasn't the Disney Channel because they didn't have a channel, but when they would show Davy Crockett, man, that was rough. It was rough for old Mac.
Fighting at the Alamo?
Yeah.
Yeah, Travis. James Bowie and Crockett died down there. That's what Travis.
I could still sing that song. Davy Crockett. King of the wild frontier, born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, greenest state in the land of the free, fighting and burning like a devil something, south through the swamps of the Florida glades, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. Yeah, so when he died, that was like a blow to me personally, just so everybody knows that.
Yeah, I think he died just a little bit before you were born.
I know, but I did not take it well that Davy Crockett died at the end of the movie, okay? They don't show him dying. He goes in to see Jim Trout. He goes in to see Bowie, gets to see the Bowie knife. He goes in to see Colonel Travis, right?
Yeah.
And where was Sam Houston? How come he wasn't there?
They were down. They were coming. I mean, he was rounding up the army. I mean, it was a republic. It was just really, and by the time they got there, it would have been, but it was Sam Houston that, you know, defeated that kicked the crap out of Santa Ana later in the years.
All right. So there's so what's left of the Alamo? So when I look at the picture, okay, so when you go back historically, so that building, and there was a larger, probably, fence around it?
Yeah, I'll send you. You'd have to look at, there's probably some better ones out there, I don't know. But you'd have to look at some real representative pictures of what it looked like back then. Because the problem is the movies and everything else, and TV is really made it to where it's not really what it was. I mean, the building, the Alamo, the actual Alamo, is probably, no bigger. I mean, inside, probably the length of a swimming pool, like an Olympic-sized swimming pool. And then probably as well. I mean, so, yeah, it's probably about the size of an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
I'm looking
at the whole building.
I'm looking at a, inside. I'm looking at like a mock-up of what it looked like. So they show it, and then they show, like, the rectangle where kind of the fort area. It looks a lot like, you know, interesting. The okay, give me a couple of interesting facts that you found out about the Alamo.
Oh, that about of the 260 defenders, the people that it made up, how many people did it make up? They have a flag inside the Alamo, and on the flag is a streamer, a battle streamer, and the battle streamer depicts how many people came from either that state or that country. So there were people from Denmark, England, Germany, that were there at the Alamo, you know, to believe in the cause of, you know, to fight for the Republic of Texas for its freedom.
Really?
But other states, too. I mean, you know.
But there weren't too many dudes there. There was how many total people there? 238 at the end?
They say anywhere from 200, I think like 180 to 260 are the accounts of how many people were there.
That doesn't look good. How many people did Santa Ana show up with?
About 1,800 to 2,000.
Really? I guess that makes it a fair fight when you're talking about Texans.
Yeah,
since they weren't even Texans,
it's about right. 200 Texans is about 2,000.
They weren't even Texans; they were Americans. Okay, so let's.
No, they were Texans.
No, they were.
They called themselves no.
They called themselves Texans. Okay.
No, this was they were Texans.
No, whatever. They were Americans who became Texans. So, whatever.
Well, they weren't, there were other people there that were not from America that became Texans as well.
But they came to America to be Americans, and then they wound up in Texas. Shit show, somebody says, yeah, we're all going to stay and die. Hey, what did Musselman just say? He said, we're all going to stay and die. Was that in my contract? Did I sign up for that? All right. Hey, I'll be on that that back rear corner. I'll take that from the 02 to 04 tonight. Oh, that's where you'll find me. Mac.
Here's an interesting thing. So I was reading a lot of the stuff about it again. And there's a controversy. I mean, it's kind of an interesting read. It was kind of that whole, what would have happened if the Alamo never existed? I mean, they didn't have that. So think of this. The fall of the Alamo, what it triggered in the Republic of Texas was this cry, you know, the battle cry, remember the Alamo, and then they went forward and they united each other. So it's kind of like the modern day, like back then, it's almost like the towers, you know, the Twin Towers being struck on 9/11 for the battle cry where people were then, you know, despite communism or terrorism across the globe. You know, and there was a big, strong sense of patriotic duty, you know. So it's amazing to see these triggers, you know, Pearl Harbor,
in history.
All of these things.
But how does it change? So if it doesn't, if that fight doesn't happen, Texas doesn't become a state?
I, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. It, because
I think or it, I think
probably
it would have.
Yeah. But much later.
Point. At some point. They would have sought in their own best, but they would have sought in their own economic best interest to be a part of, you guys would be like Puerto Rico.
Right. Sure. Whatever.
The email.
Don't, there's no reason to do this, Dennis Warren. Don't do this.
Mac, did Gunner watch the president in Helsinki? What did he think? Yeah, did you watch the president in Helsinki? What do you think?
I didn't watch the president in Helsinki. Gunner doesn't watch the president.
You know, I saw
me. I cringe.
I saw me.
There's actually a really good, I watched last night this thing called American President on Showtime, or Cartoon American President. Have you seen that?
No.
Dude, I was laughing my ass off. I mean, it's pro-left, you know,
of course.
They paint Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to be the real American heroes. I mean, you're like, okay, whatever. This is a cartoon. It's fiction.
Leaders of the resistance.
Yeah. But the way they portray the president, man, it's freaking hilarious. So, you know, and I'll bet you if someone turns him on to this, Trump would watch this and he'd probably get a laugh about it.
You might be,
but
you,
I don't
you
watch.
Might be
I don't.
Right.
I can't watch him. I can't.
Well, I listened to. I took the first because it happened while we're live and a pretty big deal. So, Vladimir Putin's opening statement and Donald Trump's opening statements. And you know what? Let me tell you. I think it's the most scripted I ever saw him. He wasn't up there kind of wheeling and
dealing. I didn't
watch the Q&A, but he very, very much stuck to his script. Cause I was talking about this in the first hour. Like, I'm already cringing. Okay. Like he goes to NATO and he lays the wood to NATO. He lays the wood to Great Britain over the weekend. Now he's going to go to Russia and cuddle up to him and be all nicey, kissy face. What's wrong with that picture? Come on. Lay the wood to them too. B.D. Trump. And so I was cringing about things he might say. But I thought, you know, he did okay. Thought he did okay. And I've yet to listen to the Q&A, so we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But I just, okay. Email wondering your thoughts. Another email. Hey, Mac, I have an Alamo question. Is it expensive to go there? Does Gunner think it's worth the time to go there?
I think it's no, it's not expensive. Nothing, if you do it right. I mean, nothing's really that expensive. But to answer the second part of the question, I think as Americans, we need to go to all of those places. You know, we need to go look at all of our history. We as Americans avoid our own history because we think that it's about slavery and it's about all this negativity stuff. There's a lot of great stuff out there if you just go look for it, and it's right in your backyard. I mean, so, you know, like I said, you can go to places where the Lewis and Clark expedition, where they took advantage of Sacagawea and the Indians and then claimed all the glory to themselves as white men taking it from, again, from the Native Americans.
But you
can go to those places. You can go to, you know, battles, the Civil War battles, not only on the East Coast, but there's some of them in the interior,
right,
that took place along the Mississippi River in Tennessee. You can go down to New Orleans and look at the Battle of 1812.
Go to the South, you can go through, I mean, for instance, I'll tell you what, go to Birmingham. There's civil rights things to go look at. And Mike and I had this discussion when we were talking about Confederate monuments. Don't take them down. That's our history. Okay? Build it out. Tell the rest of the story. Yeah, this is a statue erected when the nation attempted to bind itself, when there was no more costly war in American history than the American Civil War. The sons and daughters, it created organizations like the Sons and Daughters of the Confederacy, were honoring their fathers, their grandfathers.
To remember.
Right.
Yeah.
And the nation was binding itself back together. It was necessary. However, the rest of the story is over 200,000 people were bought and sold, black people were bought and sold on the docks right there that now houses the Bellside Brewery and Tavern. That's right. Of those people, you know, and then you tell the rest of the story. Don't hide it. Don't apologize it. It is, and that way people learn. But, you know, you go to Birmingham, Alabama, you can go to the church where those young black girls that sang in their choir were killed when somebody put a bomb in the church. You go see that. You talk about something that will leave a mark on your ass. And so I'm with Mike. There's history all over this. We were driving from when we moved to North Dakota. It was in Wyoming. It was Fort Sheridan in Wyoming. So if you Google Fort Sheridan in Wyoming, but it's one of the forts. I was reading about it as I was driving. Named after Phil Sheridan, a famous Union cavalryman, and after the war, went out to the West, and the fort is still largely intact. And you go, and I think it's Fort Sheridan, and you look at it, and you're like, wow, this is how they came out. This is the kind of post they built. And this is the way they did it. Barracks, big green area for the cavalry parades and cavalry training, blah, 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 blah. But it gave you some sense of it's Fort Kearney, not Fort Sheridan that I'm thinking of. But it gave you some sense of how they lived. And the same thing down in El Paso, Texas, at Fort Bliss. The layout of Fort Bliss is laid out as an old frontier cavalry post. So it's, I mean, I love history, so I love that shit. So I'm with Mike.
Yeah, but I mean, you could go anywhere, but yes, go to the Alamo. I mean, go everywhere. Go to all of these places where defines who we are as Americans. What, you know, but learn about it before you go so you can get better respect and, you know,
well,
what you're looking at.
You just get more out of the trip.
Yeah, and you get a better understanding of what you're looking at, what you're standing on. And it's important. And that way, you know, it's like you said, then the memory of these people that went before us never dies. That's the key thing.
Right.
And honoring them.
But I will tell you what, it's they're wonderful experiences and, you know, very cool, very cool. And you get a chance to see how America has evolved. It's Fort Phil Kearney is in, I can't remember along what interstate in Wyoming, but it's the old wooden, you know, the old wooden fort that I used to make with plastic little snap together things when I was a little kid. And, but you know, how they interacted with the Indians, where did the Indians live in the fort or next to the fort and all this other stuff. So, American history, very cool. And as Mike said, all over the country. I mean, you go to Arizona. Right, all the different Indian tribes. Some of them living in it's not the Pima. It's who lives in the cliffs in Arizona?
Hey, come on, that's the Hopis, man.
Sorry, whoa, man.
That's my people.
I know you're 15% Native American. Do you know which tribe you're affiliated with? Did they give you that back in your saliva test?
What do you mean? What tribe within the Hopi Indians?
Well, you're what, 15% Native American?
27%.
That's a lot.
My mom is half. Because my grandfather was 100%. So my mom, my grandmother being from Spain and my grandfather, so my mom is like half. She's half Native American and half Spanish. And so my dad intervened with the German, and he's mostly German. So that's where I get, like, a bigger chunk, right?
Right.
But the Hopi Indians are part of the Pueblo Nation.
Part of the Pueblo Nation, but they are the infamous caves into the side.
They're the cave dwellers.
The cave dwellers.
Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting stuff. The yeah, Native American culture is pretty interesting too. How they did it, the place that warriors took in the tribe. All pretty interesting. And if you've never been, for instance, up in the Dakotas, they call them Wichipis. And so, you know, so they would have these Native American cultural events, and, you know, I would go to them. And the way they sing around they beat that round drum, and the voice, the noises that they can make with their throats, which are not natural noises, pretty crazy. So, no, culture, American culture. Yeah, all over the place, busted up. All right.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
At what point do we get to talk about baseball?
When it's over.
So we don't get to talk about it anymore? That's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, what do you want to talk about?
Okay, let me give you my analysis. Okay.
That the facts that the Red Sox are still in first place?
Yeah, no. Here's my analysis.
The facts that the Red Sox just crushed the Blue Jays?
Yeah. My analysis of the American League East, which we're mostly concerned about, is this. And I'll give you Johnny McNamara's axiom for having a great baseball season, right? You got to play .500 with your peers, right? So the teams that you're as good as, you got to play .500 mm-hmm. with. The teams that are below you, you've got to beat on them. You've got to at least win 2 out of 3, and then you mix in sweeping them. The difference between the Yankees and the Red Sox are that the Red Sox annihilate teams below them. The Yankees, 2 out of 3.
Just beat them.
And 2 out of 3.
They just beat them.
They just split with Cleveland, right? They split with Baltimore. They lost 2 out of 3 to Texas. The Red Sox. So the Red Sox, my prediction is the Red Sox will win the American League East because they're more mature as a baseball team. The Yankees are not that mature yet to do that. Cause I think that's like, I think that's mental toughness and focusing just as hard to beat teams you know you're supposed to beat and going out and doing it. I think it's a little soft
right.
when you don't do that. So my prediction is Red Sox will win the American League East. And then the Red Sox, though, last year did the same thing and then faltered. Sale had a tough, playoff and they lost to who? They lost to Cleveland in the first round. So then after that, I'm not making any predictions. So my prediction so far is Red Sox win the American League. There you have it.
That's a good prediction, Mac.
And I thought you would like it, but we'll see if it happens.
Yeah.
Right. It's not what
That's
I want. It's not what I want. Responsible
adult-like decision.
I know. You don't think in sports in terms like an adult. I thought I would introduce you to the subject. So
yeah,
Let's talk about our trip. So we've kind of finalized our trip plans for Almarin Radio to go expeditionary. I leave on Monday the 30th, fly to Dallas, Texas, get in at 2:22, and
okay.
And then,
are you coming into Love Field or Fort Worth, Dallas, Fort Worth?
I think it's Dallas, Fort Worth.
Okay.
I think,
well,
I think Southwest.
Make sure you tell me.
I'll send you the itinerary.
Yeah. I don't want to be.
Don't keep me waiting, okay? Don't give me the stuck in traffic, Mac. I'm going to be 3 hours late. So sit outside on the curb. Blah, blah, blah.
Where are you? I'm at the airport, Mac. Where are you at? I'm at the airport.
Yeah.
What's the airport say? It says Love Field. Okay. You told me Dallas Fort Worth. Oh, dude.
I thought the only airlines I saw that flies into Love Field is Southwest. True or not?
No, I don't know. Are you coming to Love Field or DFW?
DFW.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be there.
So.
I'll be waiting for you.
With bells on. Okay.
Well, no bells.
No bells?
No,
okay.
No, I have my hat on. You'll see me.
Yeah, my God. All right. So, how long is the trip to Camp Lejeune from Granbury, Texas?
So we're going to we're stopping in between, right?
Yeah, we have a stop. We have an accountability stop we have to make. So we're going to do that.
Does he know we're coming?
Doesn't matter. We'll go. Doesn't matter.
Okay. Yeah, we got an accountability. We got a counseling stop. we're stopping to counsel a young Marine.
We're going to go take care of some business. So we're going to do that. So looking forward to that. And so have you driven this route? Because you're not an East Coast Marine. You're a West Coast Marine. Have you ever driven this route?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh, yeah? Really? When did you drive it?
Dude, I was stationed in Quantico. I went to school at Fort Benning. I mean, there was a lot of times where I'd go back and forth coast to coast.
Got it. And that's really the way you drive. You drive the southern route, unless you have relatives to the north, and then you might do that. But other than that, fastest way?
There's no way to get out from the north.
Well,
the cool thing about the route we're going, man, is will be the possibility of storms.
You're right.
Dude, I'm telling you. Nothing is cooler when you're driving on 40 and you're like in, you know, on the western edge of Oklahoma and you look and you see those black clouds and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then the lightning and then the visibility turns almost zero because you can't see with the rain. Yeah.
Tell me when we get to the good part. What's the craziest piece of weather you've seen while you were driving?
Well, I've seen tornadoes. Like, just off to the side, you're like, oh, look, tornado.
The craziest thing I saw was in Montana, and it was I'd never seen one. It was lightning during a blizzard. I've never seen
that. Oh, yeah, I've seen that a lot.
I've never seen that. Blizzards, you know, I've seen them, wind and snow, but this was crazy. In Montana and lightning. So that's probably the craziest driving thing weather I've ever seen. Montana. So okay. So then we get to Camp Lejeune, spend a couple days there, and then you go home and I go north.
Yeah, and then we go to the change of command.
He's out here today. DJ Finesse. Out here with one of his kids. So he'll be heading over this way, I think, pretty soon. So we'll go have lunch or something like that, hang out for a bit. So that'll be fun. Mike, and I.
Speech? Remember, give him, tell him. Dude, be short, be seen, and be gone.
The new guy coming in, when you take command, and our buddy Dave Furness, Major General Furness, now is going to be he's going to take over the 2nd Marine Division, and so the protocol is the outgoing guy gives a long speech, the incoming guy says what, happy to be here, thanks his family, thanks the CG, probably ought to throw the commandant in there for letting them take it over, and then sounds liberty call.
Yeah,
but I've been to change commands where the incoming guy talks longer than or has a more moving speech, and you're like, uh-oh, this is not going to be good. I mean, who cares? I mean, the other guy's leaving, but it's just, it makes it very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. So you got to stay in your lane. Everybody stay in your lane. So Dave Furness and I, we've served together four times, battle buddies times three. I went over in 2004. He left, I think, before Mike got there. Mike.
Where?
In Ramadi. He was plans, division plans when we went over, and he ran the ad bond.
He was there. I remember him, but he left shortly after.
He wasn't there. When did you get, what month did you get there?
I got there in August of...
No, he was gone.
2004.
He was gone in May. If that. Maybe April. He was there for only 60 days. And then Mike and I, and Mike was with 3-5, Dave was with 1, CO 1-1. Mike was the CO of 3-5, but there was a lieutenant colonel in charge of it. And I was with the regiment in Fallujah. And then we were all part of RCT1, Dave commanding, well, Mike commanding, Dave nominally in charge as a commander, and me working in operations. So yeah, three of us are, we've been around a lot of the same stuff. So we're going to go watch him assume the duties of 2nd Marine Division. Follow me.
Yes. And see some buddies.
Yeah, our buddies.
We got some other buddies are coming in.
We have Napa Man's coming in. We're going to get a chance to talk to him about the tires on his truck. So we'll get a chance to talk.
Is Napa Man going to be in uniform? Does he have to be in uniform?
He should be. Got to be, right? Can't go in civvies.
Yeah, he's going to be. What's the uniform of the day?
I have the invitation right here. I RSVP'd this morning. Even got a reply.
Oh, you talked to Kelly? Did you call her?
No, I just sent an email. I almost said, Mike Musselman will be my aide, but I didn't want to go there. Uniform, Woodland Marpat. Civilian?
Oh, good for them, man.
Business casual.
Well, I'm wearing jeans and a collared shirt. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that business casual?
Really?
Is that business casual in Texas?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's actually dress wear in Texas.
But you're not going to wear, like, some crazy shirt like Montana Man, like a pirate shirt or anything like
that. No. Like a white collared shirt.
No cosh, no crazy, like, okay. All right, so we would all look at it and say, that guy's solid. We wouldn't look at it and go, whoa, are you in the theater? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Are you performing?
No.
Are you performing in
like
Pirates of Penzance tonight? Why do you say that? Well, your pirate shirt. It's not a pirate shirt!
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that, bro.
Don't be so hard on him.
I saw the pirate shirt, okay? I was like, why are you in costume? He wasn't real happy. There was a fist fight among his interns. So he's got some...
That's what I heard.
Yeah, he's got some baggage he's dealing with.
What's going on? This is a direct reflection upon, you know...
His leadership capability.
This is his thing. Yeah. You can't have fights. They're civilians. Civilians don't fight.
Yeah, that's awesome, though. You got civilians that'll fight? We love that. You know, I just don't like it. You know what bothers me about fighting is if I don't get to see the fight. That bothers me. It's almost
Did
like...
Did Rudy see it?
No, they were inside. There was a knock on the door. Boom, boom, boom. What's up? And he said, oh, this can't be good. They never come up here. You got a minute. And then he comes back, goes outside, comes back in. I'll be back. Had a little fisticuff, settling some issues down there. Okay, boys, let me tell you how this works. I did this on sea duty. Break up the fight. We go up in the hangar bay, put the mats down, put the gloves on, and somebody's got to quit in order for me to halt the fight unless somebody gets knocked out. What? They would be Marines at Mardet on the USS Ranger? Because, first of all, there isn't shit going on when you're at sea. Okay, it's the same boring shit. And so somebody's going to get in a fight, and we're not going to get to watch it? Come on. You're depriving us of that which is ours. So the rule was NCO's got to break the fight up, and then we go upstairs immediately. Nobody's talking. Nobody's explaining. We don't care why you got in a fight. We just want to watch. Put the gloves on. Let's go, boys. About 1,500 people in the hangar bay watching Marines fight. Somebody had to say, I quit. But they never would, so they just would ultimately collapse. Arm weariness. They just dump over. Like Gunny would say, so they're embarrassing me now. Get them out. All right, we're done. Nobody gave. We'll be back tomorrow, maybe. But the other thing it did is it stopped most of the fighting, too. But it was fun when they did fight. And it was always over stupid shit, right? Someone so jumped out of his rack. I was standing there. He came down, both boots on my spit shines. So I smoked his ass. Because he did this about 4 months ago. I told him, don't do that shit again. You got to look before you jump. And so he's like, shit like that. Right? You know? So-and-so popped the movie out that I was watching so he could finish watching his. Yeah, I'm not having that. Yeah, well, that's a good reason. I respect that. Let's go up. Want to see if you can handle yourself, boys. And the Navy guys would get fired up as hell. Marines are fighting! Get out of here! People come running. Maintenance on aircraft stopping so they could watch a fight. It was good. It was good. A little bit of genius. A little bit of white trash genius. So. So you ever throw blows in the Mardet area, Mike? Because that's, let me tell you, talk about close quarters combat. Oof.
No, dude,
you're a lover.
No, man.
You're a lover,
you
not
guys
a fighter?
Had a different. I had a, no, when we were in Philadelphia, I told you the story.
Oh, yeah.
They made our Berlin area to our specifications. So
I don't even
the sergeants, we had like our own staterooms on the other side. So we shared, you come down the ladder well into, then you go left, you go down into the regular Marines response area.
Wait a minute. You come down the ladder well to the quarter deck.
Right? No. So that's why it was different. So you come down the ladder well, you come to the, it's like the entrance to the quarter deck where the Marine space,
right.
Like, you buzz in, and then they let you in, then you go down the ladder well, and then you're on the quarterdeck. And then to my right is the sergeant guard's berthing area. So it was a big area on the side that we had our own access to, and it had four staterooms in it with a common area. So it's pretty nice. And it was... all because of, like I said, when I was one of the first Marines to check aboard, these guys come and talk to us. Or I was like one of the only Marine Mardec guys there at the time, and they were redoing the whole ship. And they said, hey, what would you like done in your Berlin area? And I'm like, let's see. And so we did it. That was how it started.
Are you kidding me? That's awesome, man.
No, because they regutted it, man. It was nothing but big empty cavities when I got there. I mean, the ship had holes in the side of it, dude.
Some of our Marines, the Ranger came out of SLEP, but they didn't, I don't know that they had that kind of sway with how they built the non load bearing bulkheads, which are pretty flimsy. But the NCOs, I mean, they had their own area off the and it was nicer. They had more room off the quarter deck. You came down a ladder. To the quarter, and you know the thing when you're on ship, you always have this knot like midway up your shin. From you know you're going through hatches all the time, and some are watertight, some are not, and invariably you're not paying attention. Poof, steel on shin, damn it! Oh man, and it goes away after you leave the ship. But our living area is pretty tight. Mac, my husband and I just made a trip out to Missoula and stopped here on the way to Fort Laramie, Wyoming. A great app is Historical Markers. It shows all the great historical places along your route.
Mm.
And then I sent this picture, and the person I sent it to said they haven't changed much, and it's a picture of a barracks. There's racks, there's foot lockers on the floor at the end of the racks. There's rifle racks in the middle of the area along with the table and the stove to heat. So it is remarkably similar to what you would find at Marine Corps Recruit Depot in terms of the way a squad bay is set up. Pretty funny. They're not bunk beds, they're single racks, but they look a whole lot like what we still do today. Born in the 19th century. Interesting.
Cool. Yeah. What's it called? What's the app called?
It's called Historical Markers.
Okay.
So check it out. When we leave North Carolina, Mike's headed home back to Granbury. I'm going to head to see my grandson, my son, and my daughter-in-law who live in Quantico. So going to go up there. Going to get a chance to meet Bob Nielsen, hopefully, and some other people that I do stuff with here.
That's crazy. You never met Bob.
Yeah, and then somebody you talk to all the time. But you know, a buddy of ours, Chris Bronzy, is going to be at the change of command, hopefully. So another buddy of ours, Ted Greeley, Terrible Ted.
Terrible Ted.
Terrible Ted. And so, He tries to act like he's angry all the time. Just have to.
I know. He's a cuddly, nice guy.
He is. No, he's good.
He's as nice as I get. He acts tough though.
He's a good officer. His change of command is the.
Oh, he's one of the best.
Is the change of command I will never, ever forget, and the only change of command I have ever teared up at. His wife had what was believed to be terminal cancer. And
breast cancer.
Well, no, it was in, and then it got into her lymph nodes. And so she's sitting in the front row with a bandana on because her hair is gone from radiation. He was a CO at the time of 1-7, I think. And so he and I took over. I worked with him. I was the op, so he was the XO at MEF Headquarters Group. And it was awesome because it MEF Headquarters Group, anytime when you're the headquarters element of a command element, it sucks, okay? Hurting colonels and shit like that. Just a miserable, miserable job because nobody does what they're supposed to do. Everybody's got a reason. Such bullshit. So anyway, and then you have all these requirements from like Intel Battalion Comm, Law Enforcement Battalion Anglico, Radio Battalion. You have these constant taskers to send these guys all over the world. So it's just this crazy place. Anyway, and so.
Right.
So I'm the OPSO, Greeley's the XO. And Greeley was awesome as the XO because he is not afraid to wire brush anybody, and he's not afraid to say no and go fight somebody. So we had a pretty good time while he was there. We'd both been instructors at IOC. He had taught stuff that I created, and so he worshipped me from afar. He didn't like to admit that all the time, but he did. So anyway, I go up. He takes the microphone when he gives up after, everything, 1-7 standing out there, and he says to the Marines and sailors of 1-7, it's been my honor, and he talks about how great they are. He then turns around, and he looks straight at his wife, and all his buddies, peers of his are out under the covered stands in Torn.
Well, he's short tour. You got to tell him. He gave up command because – even though his wife told him not to do it,
right?
He'd been waiting for it the whole time. He gave up command. He's giving up command to spend time with his wife. She needed it.
And so, and everybody in the Marine Corps on the officer side competes to be a commander. And so he's given up his command. And he doesn't know, they don't know what's in store for them, right? First of all, would she survive? Second of all, if she does, would he ever command again? And so he looks at her and he says, I owe you. And with that, everybody's hand goes to their nose. Like, everybody's trying to fake, like, this is not getting to me. And he says, everything I've done for the last, 12 years, you've supported me as I've gone off to war. And I think by that time, in two or three different times, he said, and my career is predicated upon what you've done for me with our family. And he said, and so I owe you, and I will be there for you. And he goes on, and it was one change of command in my life I will never forget. In fact, I was sitting on the tailgate of my pickup off the parade deck. And who comes walking around the corner? Ted Greeley. So I look, and I said, hey, Colonel, what's up? And he looks at me and goes, Mac. And so I salute, comes over. We man hug it out, which I hate. And he sits on the tailgate. And we just start shooting the shit. I'm like, how are you doing? He goes, I'm hanging in there. He said, I think she's going to make it, man. She's a fighter, but it's not easy and it's tough. And I said, not an easy day today. He said, well, General Bailey, he said, has told me that he's going to do his best to get me another command once we get through this. And so he said, we just got to get through it, and we'll get through it. And it was really, I want to say it's the Marine Corps at his best because he came back and what was Mike, was
3-1?
3-1, yep. And it was
that division, he got 3-1.
Yeah, it was awesome because it's the Marine Corps as you want it to be. Doesn't always work out like that, but. He got another chance to command, and he's a good dude.
No, it's one of the times where the Marine Corps did it right.
Did it right, absolutely. So hats off to General Bailey and everybody else who made that happen. So pretty cool. So terrible Ted Greeley will be there. But get a chance to go up to Quantico, and for I don't know, for about 4 or 5 days, and hang out and see friends. So I'm looking forward to it. The big trip, and that's why you'll hear it all. You'll hear all about it on a daily basis on All Marine Radio. Going expeditionary.
Yeah. And I got mixed feelings about this now. No, I'm just kidding. It's gonna be.
Dude, are you kidding me? You will be entertained like you have no idea. And it'll be stories like this. So we walk in.
So that way you can sleep in the bed of the truck.
So we walk into this to get gas, and this guy's wearing a shirt that says this. And I look at Mike and say, don't say anything. And he says, I won't. And then he does. So it'll be stories like that. They'll be funny, though.
Totally. No, it's not going to be like that. It'll be Gunner told Mac not to say something. He said, listen, dude, I don't want to get in a fight in this state.
That's generally not the way it works. That's generally not the way it works. It's Mac, cool guy. Gunner, got to say something to somebody. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Just couldn't let it go. And then, because the guy's a hillbilly, he got to say something. So, anyway. All right, what's on the – anything on the agenda for today?
No. What is – nothing.
Nothing?
It looks like a clean trip, actually.
It's Monday.
A clean agenda.
It's Monday. It's Monday. It's weekend recovery time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went to San Antonio, you need a little selfie time.
Well, the wife looked at me and said, hey, how much longer are you going to be on? I told her, I don't know. She's like, but I thought you guys get out the call. And I said, well, in a perfect world, yes.
We're 6 minutes late. Why is she home? I thought she worked. She got fired?
No, I think, she quit. That's a whole different story.
What? And we don't know about it? I got to find this out in the street? Put her on.
What do you mean in the street? You don't find it on the street. You would have found out about it here. No, it's just a really toxic work environment she was in.
Let's talk about it. Let's name some names. Then we'll tag it on the internet and so everybody sees it. It'll be awesome.
No, it's just bad. No. Again, you know, the boss and one of the people that worked with her, human resources, just toxic. And, you know, I think she's the fifth of the person to quit within the last, you know, year and year and a half.
No.
So, I mean, it's just, it's a bad, bad situation.
You know,
this guy.
Well, I don't want to go too much into it, because it doesn't sound like a good thing. But I told my son, my youngest son getting out of the Marine Corps, moved back to D.C. He's been going out with a girl for about 3 years. And so I said, you want to know the people I know that have lived really good lives? He looks at me and says, who? I said, they go to work for companies that are run and owned by really good people. They get in with good groups that are doing good things. And I said, you know, you ought to, if I was you, I'd look into working for a nonprofit, but a really good one that has good people. And then you're doing good things, you believe in what you do, and you're working with good people. Life doesn't get better than that. And if you stay there, you slowly graduate, and you get promoted. But let me just tell you, working with idiots is a fate worse than death, because you got to go in and spend.
Oh, yeah.
You got to go in and spend a ton of time with them. It's just horrible.
Yeah. No, and that's what, you'd be better off, selling shoes at Foot Locker.
Yeah.
Have great people around you than,
being
a broker on Wall Street and having complete jerks around you.
But again, and I don't care what you do, you may be doing something that you've dreamt about your whole life. But if you're doing it with people that make your day miserable, it's horrible. It's horrible. And I'll tell you what, and I can think Mike and I both have loved our time in the Marine Corps, but we can both tell you stories about toxic places we've worked and toxic people we've worked for and just hated the Marine Corps because it's a caste system. There's no left or right. It's only up and down, and you have no wiggle room. Awful. awful, awful, awful.
Yep.
All right.
No, and you know, and I think I had a great opportunity where I never really experienced that to the nth degree. I mean, I had some really crappy places, but they didn't last long. So
the no. Anyway, it's in my opinion, it's one of the keys of living a happy life. Find a company that has great people and is doing something good or productive, and stay on a great team. Stay on a great team. So anyway, there you go. Life advice from the Mike brothers. All right, man. Have a good day.
All right, man. I will see you, or I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Tell Tina, man. 10 minutes late. Cut us some slack, man. What's up with that?
I know. I know what she wants, so I'm going to pretend I'm still talking to her. I think she wants me to go sit over there. And, you know, this is one of those things where I try so hard to get out of them. It's like, oh.
Really?
But it never works.
So you just, so we're going to get off, and you're going to act like you're still on?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm just going to sit here with the earbuds in my head and see how long I can pull this off.
All right. I'll talk to you. There you have it. The one and only. Can't make it up. That'll do it. If you're just joining us, big news of the day is President has gone wheels up, or is in the process of going wheels up in Finland and headed back, I believe, to the United States. I don't know that he's making any stops on his way home. But I don't know anything about the Q&A, so I'm curious to listen to it in its entirety. The President in Helsinki. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. But we'll talk about one of my favorite subjects, the media, and the whole concept of Europe as a foe or the EU as a foe. So don't touch the dial. You need to listen to that. And then Alex Hollings joins us. And if you didn't hear the opening statements of the press conference, you'll hear that in hour two. And so you can look forward to that. And then, as always, the Gunner in Hour 3. Yeah. Plans finalized. Expeditionary movement to the East Coast, then to D.C. Fired up about it, too. But, yeah. Get to stop and see people that I haven't seen in years. One is my gunner, Kevin Calhoun, Lance Corporal, United States Marine Corps. Email, only the gunner could talk to himself for another hour. You know what? He'd do it, too. He'd do it. He'll sit there. Yeah, Mac. No. I'd like to tell you that he wouldn't, but he will. Anyway, don't touch that dial. Have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow. More of All Marine Radio then. On a Monday, we are over and out.